This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On tonight's show, I have a very special guest. His name is Mark Jacobson, J-A-C-O-B-S-O-N, and he has recently published a book, the title of which is Pale Horse Rider, William Cooper, The Rise of Conspiracy, and the Fall of Trust in America. It was published in September of this year, and I just completed reading it. It's an excellent book, and we're really happy to have him on the show. Mark, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. Thanks so much for agreeing to the interview. If you can, just to get started, can you please tell the audience a little bit about your background and how you became interested in this subject?
Well, I'm a New Yorker. I was born here. I live here. You might be able to tell it from my voice, but that was not too bad. And, my interest, I've been a general interest, but I don't know exactly what to call it, but I've been a magazine writer for the past nearly 50 years, and I usually do topics that are, I rarely do the same thing twice. I don't know why that is, but anyway, I like to jump around and do different kinds of things. I've done, like, I was the music critic of Esquire magazine for a couple of years, and then I was a foreign correspondent guy that they sent me overseas, you know, did all kinds of stories like that. And I just like to jump around. And certain topics kind of jump out at me, and somehow some of them I forget all about after a while thinking them over, and some of them just sort of stay in there for strange reasons that I have never really been able to ascertain, because my other books are not about this kind of stuff at all. So, William Cooper is a fascinating figure to me, in the sense, partially because of how I came to find out about him, sort of like bonded, I'm kind of bonded with him. I don't think our conversation, if we both actually were in the same room together, would actually end well, but I find him a fascinating figure nevertheless. So, what happened to me was I had met somebody who said that he had something very important to show me. This was years ago, and his father was dying. I assumed it was about his father, but actually, when we got back to his apartment, he showed me a copy of his Zapruder film, which is for everybody who might not know, it's the only live visual record of Kennedy's assassination. So he showed me this film, and he said that I should watch The Driver, because the guy who was driving the car, a man named William Greer, is actually going to turn around and shoot the president in the head. Now, this was, when I was looking at this film, it was probably like 1991 or something, I don't know. But it was many, many years after the Kennedy assassination, and I heard hundreds of Kennedy assassination conspiracies and rationales for why it might have happened, but I certainly never heard that the driver shot him. And gotcha. But if you look at the video, of the Zapruder film long enough, and you had a few drinks or something like that, you might actually see the guy turn around and shoot the guy, because it does look a little bit like that. So I thought this was kind of weird, and I asked him, like, where'd you get that film? And he said, well, I bought it from a guy named William Cooper. And William, who was then going around the country selling this footage of Zapruder film, you know, saying that the driver shot the president. So then several years after that, kind of unrelated, I was walking down the street near my house, and I saw Old Dirty Bastard, who is a member of the Wu-Tang Clan, which I don't know what your readership, what your listenership is about, but they might know who he is.
They probably know the reference, yeah.
Yes, well, in any event, I saw this guy who's
kind of the Ringo Starr of the Wu-Tang Clan. It was a rap group from Brooklyn, from where near where I live. And he was reading Behold the Pale Horse, which is William Cooper's book. Now, I didn't really get to talk to him at the time, but it stuck in my mind that, there's that guy again, William Cooper. And then I found out that not only was William Cooper in his book very popular among other rappers, but it was really actually one of the most read books in the New York State prison system. So I found that to be kind of strange also, and I put these two things together and I realized that William Cooper, who I now know was a guy who most people said was into militia and lived in Arizona, and his book was somehow being read by all these African Americans that lived around my house. So I thought that was a kind of cultural something. I couldn't even figure out what, that I felt obligated to try to investigate. So that's where it first started for me with Bill Cooper. And then I listened to his show and all that kind of stuff, and I liked it.
So you, when would you first think you started putting pen to paper and started researching this book?
Well, I first thought about it to write it and actually do it as a book. When years went by, I wrote several books before that.
Gotcha.
Then somehow, around 2013 or 14, it just seemed like he was coming up again. You know, he was like, I don't know how to explain the way your imagination works and what makes you want to devote a lot of time to a topic that most people that you don't know anything about. And actually think is kind of crazy. So, but in any event, I felt that there was something there. It was interesting to me. And there was a lot of the stuff that he was saying, which maybe 10 or 15 years before, I would never, ever think had very much veracity to it. Then I would think that, well, actually, as time went on, it made a lot more sense to me. So, there wasn't really necessarily any kind of political issue that we're talking about here, just that some of the stuff that he was saying, not necessarily his predictions, but he seemed to have an attitude that was matching more people that I kept running into.
Interesting.
I mean, people that felt that like things were not fair, things were not, that everything was rigged, and that, like, you know, you really didn't have a chance to get ahead, and that kind of feeling that is really, there's no right wing or left wing about it. It's just a lot of people feel that way.
Right.
And and it just sort of like the stuff that William Cooper was saying was kind of interesting. And then I guess many people that may listen to your show know, they know all about Alex Jones and that kind of stuff. And the stuff was beginning to peak. You know, I was wondering where it came from, you know, like where did a lot of this stuff come from? And then I remember William Cooper was really the first person to really articulate that kind of, you know, in a kind of reasonable way that wasn't too Nazi or any kind of stuff like that.
Right.
So, like, you know, he was like somebody who was seemed like a person who was not really necessarily politically biased to one side or the other, the way things are now, but really was somebody who was actually seeking a kind of American truth that I also was seeking. You know, something about this country that we need to know. And the way he was researching it, like, and I mean, all the famous stuff about him that his fans know about the UR research and stuff like that, and Wake Up Sheeple, that all sounded kind of okay, you know? I just thought, I began to see him not necessarily as any kind of political person necessarily, or just somebody who was seeking, who was actually seeking the truth, whether he found it or not, or whether the stuff that he thought was the truth is not really up to me to say. I just really enjoyed thinking about somebody who was deadly serious about trying to figure out what's going on.
Right.
And somebody who wasn't necessarily an academic or, you know, just somebody who was doing it from the seat of his pants and was original about it, not necessarily repeating everything he saw on the internet or something
right.
like that.
Well, he was probably one of the first kind of fringe.
At that time.
Right. The first fringe researcher, pre-Alex Jones. You know, I think that William Cooper was really the model for these kind of future researchers into secret societies and secret history. Really can trace their lineage back through William Cooper.
Yeah, well, there's always been a lot of these people. I mean, you know, William Cooper's read all these books, people that were written by people kind of like with his mindset. That's how he got his idea. But, I mean, Alice Jones was actually William Cooper's acolyte. He used to listen to him every night.
Right.
I mean, when he was a young fraternity boy, whatever he was, back in Dallas or Austin, wherever.
Austin,
he was,
yeah.
He used to listen to William Cooper under, you know, like the way I used to listen to Cousin Brucey or like one of these kind of radio DJs back when I was a young.
Well, that was interesting because
sleep, you know.
Right. Well, William Cooper was—he was one of the first or early shortwave radio. I mean, he was accessible pre-internet, right?
Yeah, no, well, the thing that's also another thing I found to be interesting about him, but just to finish the thing about Alice Jones, Alice Jones was the person, when the night that William Cooper was shot dead, Alice Jones, in one of the few times I've ever noticed him doing anything like that, actually did some real reporting on this and called up several people in town to try to get an idea of what had happened to Bill Cooper. And, you know, that was kind of like, very enterprising on his part, but it was mostly because he really cared about William Cooper.
That's,
in a way,
I don't
they
think,
had all these falling
yeah, the,
outs and
yeah,
stuff
the
like
feelings
that.
Weren't mutual, right?
Calling, but,
right, yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know. Bill Cooper is the kind of guy like, I mean, I think that he probably disliked almost every other radio host for one reason or another. You rarely hear him say anything good about anybody who's actually living, you know. So, you know, he's a crotchety guy, you know, and that's one other thing I found interesting about him. I mean, he was just sort of like, you know, he was off on his own. He was thinking his own stuff, and he came up with a lot of interesting conclusions, some of which were, I always, when people ask me about him, I always say he was like part of prophet and part of huckster.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And because he has the prophetic part, you know, was stuff that he, you know, which we could talk about it. The huckster part was there all the time. I mean, he was trying to make a living.
Right.
Being on the radio. I mean, you know, he wasn't doing it for love, really. And he's trying to, I mean, he was in a way, but he was trying to make a living as well. And there were certain so-called conspiracy theories that he used to mouth, and I don't think he really believed in them. You know, I don't think he really cared whether the Americans had gone to the moon or not, or any of this kind of stuff. But, you know, there were certain things that we really cared about, and one of them was the Constitution of the United States, which every American should care about.
Right.
And they should all know what it says, and then when people misquote it, or, you know, they should know that. And that was one of the things that Cooper said, because he was, like, you know, dead center on that. He wasn't...
One of the things I learned in your book is that he became a very active member of the Constitutionalist Party back when it was not even popular at all.
Oh, well, it was that guy, Aaron Russo, who started this thing. Remember him?
Yes, of course. Huh?
Yeah, so, like, Cooper had gotten, Aaron Russo and him were mixed up somehow. I don't exactly know, because Cooper was, there was some guy who was trying to make a movie of Cooper's life, and then Aaron Russo came around and said he could do it better. And then Cooper believed Aaron Russo, and then he had a huge falling out with him, as he always did, on the radio. And
that was Philip Lambro.
That. But yeah, no.
Yeah, Philip Lambro was
Philip
the guy.
Lambro.
Who was the right?
Philip Lambro. Yeah, Philip Lambro. I talked to Philip Lambro. He was an interesting character, man, I gotta say.
Well, I just give you full credit for going and tracking down all these people who I didn't know Cooper was, you know, had relationships with. Aaron Russo, who was, Alex Jones referenced him, and he had done a lot of independent research himself. Famously had a discussion about him, Russo sitting down with one of the Rockefeller family heirs and talking about, you know, the future of the New World Order, really something that... something that William Cooper would talk about.
Yeah, but I think that, well, I mean, I'd see, like, I'm not really, I'm a journalist, you know. I come at this topic from the point of view of, well, I mean, okay, this is what the material is. First thing you got to do is get out of your house and go around and start talking to everybody who actually knew the person and see what they say, you know, as opposed to just reading the same old crap on the internet. I mean, which is a pet peeve of mine, and I won't bring it up anymore. But I find some so-called you know, so-called truthers on the internet who basically are cut and pasting everything that was on there, and they haven't had an original thought in their life.
I can tell you stories about that. Holy smokes! But you know, I give you credit. You didn't just leave your house. You actually traveled to Arizona. You actually went to
three or four times. You know what I mean? Because that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, I don't think people even. You know, I'm not trying to blow my own horn or anything like this. This is the way I was brought up to do this job, you know, and I really find it repellent to have, you know, the chief bozo in charge here telling me that I'm a member of the enemy of the people, you know, because, like, people, what journalists do is they go out and find stuff out, you know, and then they write down what they, if they're doing their job well. I'm not saying they all are, but this is something you're supposed to do. You're supposed to go talk, like, if Bill Cooper was in the flying saucer thing, which he definitely was. I mean, the person to speak to is John Lear, because he knew him very well. So I went out there to Las Vegas, and I talked to the guy. But that's not a big deal. That's what you're supposed to do.
But that was very very interesting. Can you talk about, Bill Cooper lived in Eager, which is on the east part of Arizona, very close to the New Mexico border. Can you talk a little bit about what that country was like and where he lived?
Oh yeah, it's very beautiful. I love it very much. I like going there. I went to my wife and I went out there on two different occasions to the thing that Doyle Shamley was running, the which Cooper had started, called Skills. It's called Skills and Research Conference, and you know, you need to learn how to do these things in the woods and stuff like that. And but mostly we're shooting. You know, which was great, because you don't get to do that back here in New York. So we thought that was fantastic that we could actually.
Who was, for people who don't know, who was Doyle Shamley?
Well, Doyle was a guy who still is a guy. He worked with Cooper for a while. Cooper, he was putting on this thing called, he was running a kind of. Lack of any better term, a kind of patriot kind of talk show kind of thing, where he'd have guests come to his town of Portersville, California, and, you know, people like Bo Gritz would come, and, you know, some, you know, those kind of guys. Right. And then one time he wanted to get Cooper to come, and Cooper drives a hard bargain, and he, you know, so Doyle said, well, you know, you can come up here, but you can't be an asshole about it. Cooper said, whoever said I was, what did you say that? So everybody says that. So they kind of got on after that. They became friendly. That's kind of, they both had that kind of similar sense of humor, you know. So, and then Doyle went down there, and he began to live in Cooper's place, and he's responsible, along with another guy named Rob Houghton, for really putting out all those Cooper broadcasts, without which there'd be no such thing as Bill Cooper. You know, all those broadcasts, if you look at the Hour of the Time website, those are all kind of semi-preserved. I mean, they're not the best quality, but you can hear it. You know, mostly because of the work of people that really respected Bill Cooper.
Right, and he was around, I mean, Doyle was in a documentary with Cooper, I think in 2003, Bill Cooper was killed on November 5th, 2001, about 6 weeks after September 11th.
Yeah.
But he was shot in his house. But Doyle is still around, and yeah, you actually went shooting with him and shot actual William Cooper's.
He taught me how to shoot. Doyle's a great teacher.
Gotcha. Cool. That's awesome. That's a great story.
I don't get that much practice back here. I got to say, you know, we like, you know, I mean, I'm not in favor of people going out and shooting everybody, but I mean, you know, if you want to take them target practice, because you should be allowed to do that. So, like, you know, but in New York State, they have a really draconian drug gun law. You can't even, like, look at a gun. So it was fun to go out there, and you know, I get along with everybody. I don't really make a big fuss about these political things. But, so Doyle and I became friends, and he, you know, he guided me a little bit in the research I did.
That's great. And, I mean, you had mentioned earlier when we were talking about Bill Cooper's UFO phase that preceded kind of his Mystery Babylon political sphere. Can you talk a little bit about that and Lear?
Well, I think people don't really, I mean, most of the Cooper fans, I mean, even Behold the Pale Horse, you know, post-dates his UFO stuff. So I think the USO stuff has really been kind of mostly forgot by most of the people that are...
I didn't know.
You didn't know about it. Yeah, but I mean, it's like, that was a big deal for him. I mean, that's what put him on the map to begin with. Because he had come... it's a fantastic story. I think people should read about it in the book. Because it really kind of shows the kind of person that Bill Cooper was in the sense of, like, you know... He wanted to get in front. He wanted to get he needed to say stuff, and he needed to have people listen to him. So, and I think he believed, he was a serious believer in the UFO stuff, but he got into it because he had this fantastic sighting, which I don't know if he really saw it or not. It's hard to know. This spectacular sighting that he used to talk about all the time, long before he even wrote that book or got on the shortwave radio, which he never, and I don't know what his feelings about his UFO period was, because he rarely talked about it after that. But he was a big deal. He became one of the best known ufologists in the country, and in a very short period of time, and also made this class one of his best. To me, one of his greatest performances is the speech he gave at the MUFON conference in 1989, which is online, and people can find it. But it's just fantastic. I mean, it shows the kind of orator he was. I mean, you know, it wasn't like the whole thing was fascinating, but the way he commands the audience, and he'd never spoken in front of that many people, maybe never in his whole life. Yeah, he gets up there, and he's just a natural at doing this. I mean, you can see that he's a brilliant public speaker. And he later, and that later showed up in his radio shows, I think. Like, I mean, to me, I can listen to Bill Cooper, even I don't agree with anything he says at all, because I find him to be an engaging radio personality. I like the sound of his voice.
Yeah. You know, and now that 1989 MUFON, that was with, was that where he met Norio Hayakawa?
Yeah, no, he was. He met Norio there, and then Norio put on. I guess it was after the MUFON thing. I can't really remember right now, but Cooper made a famous appearance at Hollywood High School that Norio Hayakawa set up for.
That's right. So and, I'm actually friends with Norio.
Norio is a very interesting guy as well.
Yeah, true.
Country and way. He's a Japanese country and western music player who only plays for Native Americans. I find that to be kind of fantastic.
But that's another personal vignette you include in the book, that Norio met Bill Cooper, you know, another person who was familiar.
And I mean, I just felt like, you know, I want to find out what the people actually thought of the guy, you know, that actually met him. Because when somebody's been dead, he's been dead now 18 years or something like that. There aren't that many of those people around. But also the thing about Bill Cooper, I mean, he's a legendary figure. I mean, and I mean that in both ways. I mean, he's a legendary figure in the sense that he should be a legendary figure because he did a lot of interesting things. But he also, you know, the legends about Bill Cooper are kind of like competing with the so-called facts, you know. So, you know, that was one of those things I was interested in kind of sorting out a little bit.
Well, that was an interesting, I mean, the legend of Bill Cooper has lived on in the hip-hop community, the African-American community, and the jail community, and that's something you talk about in the book, which I didn't know about, that, you know, so many people, very well-known hip-hop names, you know, people who, a lot of people who are in that community would know, are fans or have spent time reading Bill Cooper's, what is it, Mobb Deep, Tupac Shakur, Busta Rhymes, Big Daddy Kane, all these people you list out.
All those people, you know, like you talk to them now, you call them up on the phone, and you say, I'd like to talk to you about Bill Cooper, they'd be more than happy to talk to you. I mean, I have some good friends who are rappers. I mean, I was friends with this guy Prodigy in Mobb Deep, but he died, unfortunately. But there's one of the fascinating things about that is I became friendly through doing this book with a rapper named, who calls himself William Cooper. And actually we made a video together about his career, because he called himself William Cooper after William Cooper. he took his name and as a tribute. And so then I put him in the book. So we actually made a video, which has come out in the in a couple of weeks, which is the first rap video ever made about a book. and it'll be on YouTube and stuff like that. I don't know. You can look for it in a couple of weeks.
Cool. And that seems to
be brand new. We just finished it.
And oh, cool. Oh, we'll look forward to getting that. Do you have a title for it? Or is it just that the rapper's William Cooper?
It's called Pale Horse Rider.
You know, Pale Horse Rider, cool. Just the name of the book.
So it's a fantastic book. I mean, I'm not, you know, he did a great job, William Cooper. He made a great song, and the video looks pretty good, and I have a little cameo in it. I'm pretty happy with it, actually.
So everybody in jail, that's cool. So then a lot of people in jail read William Cooper's book as well. So that seems to be like one of the rite of passages if you're locked up, is to read Behold a Pale Horse.
Well, you know, I mean, that's an interesting thing, and I thought of quite a bit about that, and I wrote about it in the book. Like, why would this book become popular in prison? I think that, like, it's partially, like, when you're in prison, you know, there's a reason why Alex Jones called his, I don't know if he still does it, but one of his original shows he called Prison Planet. Do you remember that?
No, it's still around. I think website's still around.
It's still around. But I mean, because there's a sense, I think, that people feel imprisoned. They don't feel, because that's really William Cooper's main thing. What he really cared about was the application of the word freedom. Freedom, it doesn't mean, you know, what does that really mean? I don't think it is any absolute, you know, what's freedom? You can go to a supermarket and buy as many kinds of coffee as you possibly can think of. I mean, what is it? I mean, you know, what really is it that makes a person feel free? I don't think it's necessarily most of the stuff that people would answer, but he's somebody that was one of the deepest thinkers about that, which is the kind of thing that philosophers like Hegel and all these other guys would think about all the time. Like, what is that? Free, to be free. And that's something that was William Cooper's main inquiry, I think. And that's really why, you know, I was able to finish this book and write about him and stay interested in him, because I thought he was trying to get to something that I really cared about. You know, I'm not going to come up with the same definition of what that is, but that's something that people care about. They want to know, they want to feel free. They don't want to feel in prison. And when you're actually in prison, you know, I think that a book like William Cooper's would make a lot of sense to you. You know, partially because, yeah, he's also, I think there's nobody more paranoid than a guy in prison. But so William Cooper's kind of paranoid. But it's more than just that. It's just that sense of, like, trying to be free in a world where you're not free. And that's one of the main underlying things that makes William Cooper live on. And I think he's going to live on. And, you know, long past guys like Rush Limbaugh or any of these kind of guys. Because those guys don't really necessarily believe in anything. They're just radio personalities. William Cooper actually believes in something. So that's the kind of thing that sticks. And I'm happy I wrote this book. You know, it's still moderately, not great, but, you know, I'm happy I wrote it.
Well, you should be. It's a fantastic book. I'll give it a 5-star easily. I mean, I think that...
Well, you can put that on Amazon.
I will. I'm no problem. I have a long list of 5-star reviews I have to write, but this will be on that list. But I would say that you've done a real great, you've done a real credit to the community by listing out just all of the details about his life and his relationships and this kind of passion he had to make people more aware, you know. I like that quote that you had from Charles Manson, which is total paranoia is total awareness.
That's a good one, isn't it?
So, I mean, I think that if you look through a lot of the hip-hop community, for example, there is a lot of paranoia about secret forces and Illuminati and this
kind of idea
of secret societies influence our lives, yeah. So.
All the time. I mean, well, so can I ask you a question?
Sure, of course.
Well, you know, like, who am I talking to? Who usually listens to your show?
Oh, I would say people who might even like William Cooper. I would say that I would kind of maybe para-political research. You know, I think I've made my bones researching the occult. So I was an Aleister Crowley researcher.
Uh-huh.
which is interesting. Yeah, you mentioned Aleister Crowley in your book in a conversation between Anthony Hilder, who's still around, and Marlon Brando. I thought that was fascinating. But
that was interesting.
Yeah, I was basically a 9/11 researcher, and then I've written books about that, and also a satanically influenced crime about the West Memphis Three. Mm-hmm. That book is Abomination, Devil Worship, and Deception. Where this guy...
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. That's really interesting.
Well, he's in your neck of woods if you're in New York.
I wrote a piece for New York Magazine years ago about 9/11 stuff. It was really early on. But the thing is, that's another thing about William Cooper. Like, William Cooper, if you listen to that broadcast that he did, because he was on the air for 10 straight hours on the day of 9/11 when it was actually happening. And he is watching that stuff on television. And he wrote about it in the book, so I guess you saw it. But I mean, he's basically coming up with most of the stuff that 9/11 truth people said, began talking about 2 and 3 years later.
Right. Good
point. You know, controlled demolition, that kind of stuff.
Osama bin Laden as a patsy. He had Osama bin Laden picked out as a patsy four or five months.
That's his great moment, picking that out before it ever happened. That's one of his most famous things, but. Now, he really was very intuitive about, not necessarily about what exactly happened, but what people are going to think happened. You know, and he's very sharp about that.
What people were led to believe.
Well, you know, also, like, because, I don't know, he's just very sharp about, because when you predict, I mean, don't take this the wrong way, but I think sometimes it's conspiracy-type mindset how people begin predicting things. It's not really 100% that difficult because you already know who did it. It's not like the detective, like, you know, Philip Marlowe has to figure out who did it. You know that, like, there's going to be somebody that's going to be in charge who did that. And but what you have to do, what William Cooper was brilliant at, was figuring out who was going to get the blame.
Gotcha.
And Osama bin Laden was the perfect case. I mean, Lee Harvey Oswald, I mean, all these guys, all these patsies that have been, like, around the dustbin of history, you know.
I think dozens of them, they just never stop. You don't know that there's so many patsies, you could write a book on patsies, but
it's actually a great idea in a way, write a book about patsies.
There you go, there's your next book. Just gave you a book idea.
Well, I don't know if I'll do it, but I'll be happy to read it if you do it.
Okay, well, it wouldn't be the first time I've given people book ideas, so I won't feel miffed.
Well, you know, I mean, there's a lot of books I like to read. I don't really want to write them, so I'm happy to give people book ideas. I know.
Writing a book is a whole nother process.
Yeah, let somebody else do the work.
Yeah, really,
I mean, it's hard. I mean,
it is hard work.
It's very hard work, and, like, you know, as I get older, it gets harder and harder, you know, but, you know, it's just, but I think that for somebody with a, like, I'm 70 now, but I feel like I couldn't have written this book about Bill Cooper when I was a younger person, because I wouldn't have been able to understand, sympathize with him in the way that I was able to do it, because, I mean, he's a guy who, you know, he's got PTSD from Vietnam. I mean, he's got all kinds of stuff like that I feel is very much indicative of people from my generation. You know, like, it's kind of like in a way, there's this deep thing that people felt at that time of growing up, and I'm almost, that would be at least about 4 or 5 years older than me, but, you know, it was sort of kind of time, and he felt a lot of stuff that, see, if I'm living in New York, for instance, you know, surrounded by all these screaming liberal types, you know, you know, you can hear a certain kind of thing. Just like if you were living out somewhere where, you know, people only believe another way, you know.
Right. Well, so
I hate that so much.
Well, you couldn't have picked something as far as diametrically opposed to New York as going to Eager, Arizona, right? I mean, that's a pretty.
Well, I mean, I'm an American, you know. I mean, like, I really believe that America's. I'm hoping this country makes it because I feel happy to be an American. And those people out there in Eager, Arizona, and the people down the block from where I am in Brooklyn, they're all Americans, you know. It just, I think people can get along a little better if they thought about what they had commonalities between people instead of the differences.
Excellent point. That's an excellent point.
I mean, it's like, what's the point? You know, if you're not going to try to work it out.
True.
I mean, I like to see it happen.
I mean, that was one of the interesting aspects of Bill Cooper that I didn't know was his California ties. He was really a California, you know, child growing up in Long Beach.
Well, he was a military brat, really, for the most part. I mean, he lived in Japan. But the California thing was always, it must have stuck with him because he was born in Long Beach. He was actually in the VA hospital in Long Beach on two occasions as well. But, I just think he seemed like a California guy. I never really I never met him, but he didn't seem like an Arizona guy. He seemed more like a California guy.
Yeah, I mean, talk about his time in Berkeley, driving Skyline. That was kind of my territory in Northern Cal, so I didn't know that he had that.
Me too. I loved that. I just find him to be, even now, I find him to be a fascinating figure. And I've been interesting, the reaction to the book has been interesting, I find.
And what was that about?
Most of the people I know, like these people that, what you might call, I know a lot of people, people I know that are on the left, so-called left, they hate the book because they don't want to read anything about a guy like that because he's supposedly a right-winger. And the heavy-duty, like Bill Cooper fans, some heavy-duty Bill Cooper fans do not want to read it because it's like what Doyle Sam Shamley said exactly in the book, is that he doesn't want to be the one that chopped down the cherry tree, you don't want to put anything nasty and negative about the hero, so those people don't like it, but there's this whole bunch of people that really do like it, in the sense of, like, mostly right libertarians on the right, they really like it, and hip-hop people, they really like it, and it's like, it's just been a fascinating experience, So I have a Instagram account which has like a lot of different post things about the book, just sort of like a whole different version of the book, like a visual version of the book, which people can look at and follow if they want. It's called Pale Horse Rider Book.
Pale Horse Rider Book. All one word?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it has like a whole bunch of postings there that are just sort of like about the book or a little off the topic, I might have wished I'd gotten to the book or whatever, and then there's some fairly long write-ups. I enjoy doing that. And, that's been gratifying. I get a lot of response from that. There was one guy that I thought was the best thing, one of the best things that ever happened about the book was a guy named Truth Punch, still on there. And he was, like, very upset about the book when it first came out because, he thought that, like, I had besmirched Cooper's reputation or something like that. So I said, Mr. Punch, why are you doing that? Because didn't Bill Cooper used to say they got to do your own research, and you're supposed to, you haven't even read this stupid book and you're telling me how bad it is. So I said, I'll make you a deal. How about if I send you a free copy? And if you like it, then you have to buy a copy for a friend of yours. And he said, okay, I'll do that. And he read the book, and he actually really enjoyed the book and learned a lot of stuff about Bill Cooper. And he also, felt that I'd done a good job. And that really, and he wrote me back, and I felt really good about that because he was a guy who was going to be he was just going to think what he thought before he read the book because he's never going to read the book. And then he went ahead and read the book, and he changed his mind, which I think is the essence of Bill Cooper, the best sense of Bill Cooper, is you do your own research and you make up your mind, but you have to know you got to read stuff that you don't necessarily agree with, something like that, perhaps. And then you make then you have to come up with a new idea. So that was very gratifying.
That's a great story. That's a great story. I mean, that's happened to me, too. Some people don't know what's in the context of my books. Some people actually think I'm a Crowley admirer. They don't really even know what I wrote about it, my critique. But, yeah, so I've had some similar things.
People just don't use their head very much, Also, there's a lot of haters out there.
That's true. Well, that's the internet. I mean, I think that's one of the interesting things about Cooper. One thing, it wasn't just about his freedom was based in cognitive liberty, like cognitive thinking. Like, look at these
documents.
Look at this. Look at this. You know, come here and do your own research, but this is what I'm telling you. And I mean, I think in that regard, he had that kind of American trait of individual, you know, freedom. I do think that he was a remarkable, truly American figure.
Yeah, no, I mean, he was a great American. There's no doubt about it. You know, I mean, he was somebody that was, also he went out on a limb. You know, he was not that stable as a human being, I don't think. You know, I mean, it was a struggle for him, and because he had all kinds of backslides and stuff like that. But he was determined to, like, do this thing, and he basically did it. And the fact that he got shot by the cops at the end, I mean, it's like, you know, how can you come up with a better ending than that? You know?
It's a remarkable bookend, yeah. And he had kind of predicted it, or had stated, I'm going to die on my porch,
He died on his porch, on his front porch, at almost exactly the very time he predicted he would. Like, he said midnight, and it was like, I think the time of his death was 12:10. So, I mean, you know, that's pretty close. So, it's just so many fascinating things about him that I never got tired of working on it.
He was one of the only two people I know at that time, which included William Cooper, who kind of read 9/11, in my opinion, correctly, was him and Dave McGowan, another kind of researcher in the same type of vein as Bill Cooper. And I was lucky to meet Dave McGowan, but... those are really the only. I mean, I didn't figure it out for years later, but they were the two.
Well, what's your opinion? What's your opinion about building number 7?
Well, I mean, I think that shows that there's something different going on than the public story. So, building 7 flopped. Controlled demolition. You know, I think 9/11 was a planned event. So,
well, I don't know. I mean, I happen to see building number 7 personally fall down. And I couldn't tell you what happened, but, you know, I'm just there being doing my job. But
were you working at the time? Were you recording it just personally?
Yeah, I was a reporter. Yeah, I wrote several pieces about it. But the thing is that so I was actually there, so and I still have no idea what happened.
Well, do you think that it just fell down under a stiff wind, or do you think that it was demolished?
No, I don't think it fell down under a stiff wind. I mean, you know, building number 7 is, like, I'll tell you a story, which... is in this piece, which you can look up, which I think it's called, I can't remember, maybe it's from New York Magazine, like 1995, maybe, or something like that. What were we just talking about? Just my grandchild just went by.
That's okay. It was building 7, and you were going to tell me a story about...
Oh, building number 7. Actually, so I was doing a story about it, and they put out this NIST report. You know about that?
Uh-huh. The NIST
big,
report, yeah.
Fat book, you know, about what supposedly happened, right? And I was talking to the chief engineer about it, and I'm, like, thumbing through it, and I said, well, Mr., I can't remember, he's an Indian guy. I can't remember his last name. I don't get it. I mean, there's all this stuff here about building number, about the towers, but there's nothing here about building number 7. He didn't bother to explain that. So he said, well, you know, he kind of blew me off a little bit. And then later, I saw him again. I said, so what about building number 7? You know, because he knew I was from the New York Magazine, a fairly well-known magazine. He knew he had to give me an answer. Or at least lie or something like that. He says, well, I'll tell you the truth. We never could figure out what happened.
Again. So he's mystified, too, and he wrote the report on it, right?
I mean, like, you know, he wrote the report.
All right.
Chief engineer,
still scratching his head.
I mean, they couldn't figure it out. So, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I thought when he told me that, I felt he was being completely honest. Like, they really had no clue.
Well, I do think it was remarkable, and you included in your book that Bill Cooper keyed into George Bush Sr.'s speech where he mentions the New World Order, and I think it was the 9/11 date, right?
He knew about that right away. I mean, you know, you hear that a lot now, but I mean,
right.
He was talking about it back then. I mean, he just was really sharp about this. I mean, because he really believed in the New World Order, and most people do, and most people are smart to believe in it. It's just like what your definition of it might differ.
Right.
But there's definitely people that are in charge. So,
yes.
You know, and you should never, never, you know, I think that's where you got to do your own research, because these people are not always, I don't believe that they're always the same. I believe they do, they change. But there are always this group of people that are somehow in charge.
Yeah, there's it's the iron rule of oligarchy, right? So there's always
well, the oligarchy. I mean, now it's coming. Now it's becoming out. So it's so out in the open now.
Right. Yeah.
They don't even bother to lie to you anymore.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, it's remarkable. I mean, you know, one thing. Just to let you know, one of the things that influenced me most about Cooper was his Mystery Babylon series that was based on secret societies, and I just thought that for me was fantastic. His analysis of the UN. Really interesting analysis of Kubrick's 9/11.
Oh, that UN episode was one of the best ones, I thought.
Yeah, I thought so too. That was remarkable. So.
Well, that's actually, he just, for that, I think he can get the pamphlet. I can't remember the name of it, but it's he just reads from a pamphlet for that particular episode.
Interesting.
It's called, I think it's, I can find it. I can look at my notes and send you.
That's all right. You included in the book, I think, some YouTube channels where they have a lot of his, you know, Sign of the Times and Mystery Babylon series. Like, they're kept up. Like, people are making sure that those are still available online.
Oh, you can get all of those. And you can also get the transcripts, which are pretty interesting. Because sometimes, you know, people like to read it rather than listen to it.
Sure.
And if you also, one of the things I always liked about Bill Cooper's shows, which he did in Mystery Babylon quite a bit, was like the songs that he would choose to play in while the show was on were often exceedingly what you might call hip.
Very interesting.
You know?
So, I mean, he had good taste in music.
He had great taste in music, and he would play stuff like... speaking of, and it was so like, you know, when he found out that the hip-hop guys were interested in his book, he was just so overjoyed because he really liked black music. So,
interesting.
One time he played some old George Clinton song, the one of Atomic Dog,
right, yeah,
on the show, and, you know, the one that goes, woof, woof, woof.
Right. So Cooper, Yeah,
Cooper, he knows that most of the people who listen to him hate that kind of music. So he's saying, like, this is good music. You may not know it, but it's good music.
That George Clinton song is very influential in hip-hop. Yeah, that's amazing.
George Clinton.
I think you read about Louis Armstrong, too. Yeah, he loved Louis Armstrong
and
Sam Cooke.
Actually, one of his best broadcasts is called Vomit from the Sheeple, I think it's called. And he's lambasting his listeners, as he always did, you know, because they're so stupid and lazy, you know, and they won't do anything, you know, just there, you know, but he wants to get people to get off their ass. So he says, well, what about this guy? And then he just plays this long Louis Armstrong thing. He says, why don't you be more like him? You know, he just got off his ass and learned how to do this stuff. Yeah,
right.
It's a fantastic broadcast.
Self-made trumpet player, right? Self-learned.
Well, I mean, just like, Cooper was a trumpet player, and he was very serious about it, you know, intermittently, but he had a trumpet that he got when he was a kid, and he always tried to get good at it, and he was pretty good, but then he would, like, fall back, and then he practiced more and stuff like that. But anyhow, you know, it's just, it was a weird experience doing a book about that, because I kind of went outside my little so-called comfort zone, and it was worthwhile. It was worthwhile.
And you did, I mean, like I said earlier in the thing, you talked to so many people that he knew, people who I've written about, Robert Anton Wilson, you know, other people that I've run into.
Are you a Robert Anton Wilson fan?
Well, I was very interested in the Illuminatus trilogy, and he was a real Crowley admirer in addition to his other stuff.
Was he really?
Yeah, so he would reference Crowley.
I'm surprised to hear that.
Both he and Leary were good pals, you know. Timothy Leary, who you mentioned his dad. But Leary himself thought he was carrying on Crowley's tradition. So he was friends with Anton Wilson.
Is that right? I didn't know they were that close in kind of beliefs.
Their sensibilities.
I'd like to read about that.
Well, if you read my book, Children of the Beast, I'll send you a copy. Children of the Beast, Aleister Crowley's Shadow of Humanity. I talk about Anton Wilson's connection to Crowley and to Leary. So when I saw some of these figures. And I actually, there was an interesting vignette I included in my book, which was between Jacques Vallée, Robert Anton Wilson, and another guy who was really Crowley's disciple, a guy by the name of Grady McMurtry, talking about UFOs, whether they were from this universe or from another dimension, you know. So it was interesting conversations about stuff that people are
Jack
talking
Vallée,
about.
I actually just saw Jack Vallée in the flesh about 6 months ago at a Philip K. Dick, you know, the sci-fi writer, the one that wrote Blade Runner.
The Androids Dream of Electronic
Film Festival, and he was there. Jack Vallée was there. I thought he was dead, but there he was. I didn't know that he knew Robert Anton Wilson.
Wilson is a
fascinating figure too, and I love that. That was one of my favorite things that I found when I found out that Cooper and Robert Anton Wilson have been in the same panel.
Right. Well, it's just so typical. It's so typical of William Cooper is that he's screaming and shouting at Robert Anton Wilson like he does with everybody else. You know, at some point, you know, it all devolves
Robert
to William Cooper.
Could, go like, well, what's your problem, Buster?
Oh my gosh! Do you have that part?
That must have been funny.
I mean, the thing is that you have. It's interesting because you have Cooper saying you guys aren't taking this serious, and then you have these guys who think the universe is a big joke, going, "Yeah, you're right. It's just a big joke. Discordianism and all this, these other philosophies that he's involved in."
Well, Cooper had the Discordian, that yellow handbook.
Principia Discordia or whatever it is.
Yeah. He had that in his collection of books when he died. He had that. That was one thing that Doyle hit me, too. He had a list of the books that Cooper had. And then he also had The Cosmic Trigger, which is a Robert Anton Wilson book.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it was kind of interesting to see what books he had because he was a tremendous reader. He just read all his stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Well, Mark, we are coming. We've passed 50 minutes, so, I mean, we can just wrap this up. I'll let you go. I know it's a Friday night. I really appreciate you taking the time.
I'm happy to talk about it. I love talking about this stuff, so I don't mind doing that anytime.
Awesome. Well, you know, I can probably set you up with some other interviews, but where can people buy your book? Is there a better place than Amazon? Do you have a website?
I wish it was a better place than Amazon. I really do. But that's probably the best place to get it. And, I mean, they have it in all the bookstores. It's a Random House, Penguin Random House book. So
it's an excellent book. Highly recommended. A great piece of Americana history.
I appreciate you doing that.
So that's great. And also, your Instagram is Pale Horse Rider Book, all one word. So people can go check that out as well. And your last name is spelled...
There's a lot of stuff there.
Cool. It's Jacobson, J-A-C-O-B-S-O-N, so people don't misspell that. Mark Jacobson. And the book title, again...
Mark with a K, please.
Mark with a K, right. So I'm sure you get people misspelling it. But the book
people that spell it with a C, they wish they knew a lot of people from France, so anyway.
Gotcha. The title of the book, again, is Pale Horse Rider, William Cooper, The Rise of Conspiracy, and the Fall of Trust in America. Excellent book. Thank you so much for the conversation.
Well, thank you, William. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. All right.